Hi, I'm Mark Brody, co-host of The Show, one of KJZZ's original productions. It's a program with news and features from across Phoenix and the state. You can find much more at theshow.kjzz.org. Here's today's episode.
Good morning and welcome to The Show here on KJZZ 91.5 in Phoenix. I'm Lauren Gilger.
And I'm Mark Brody. Coming up, a Phoenix photographer's subversive takes on some of the classics.
And why tourism in the San Francisco Peaks has proven controversial over the years.
But first, it is time for the Friday newscap and some voices from the news this week.
The Board of Supervisors has a non-discretionary duty to canvass. That is the law in Arizona, regardless of what some people think. So we've spelled it out.
Tucson needs and deserves clear and enforceable guardrails to provide the greatest protection to our residents and our environment when it comes to data centers.
My solution is go back to the what we used to do, which is if you have more than 9 unexcused absences in a semester, you flunk the course.
I don't think that rises to the level of doxing. Having personally experienced my kids' information being posted online and having them deal with the consequences of that, I don't think this is the same thing.
Last year, I had a patient who had to stop a cancer treatment medication because she lost her insurance for 3 months and couldn't afford her medication during that time.
And joining me to talk about a debate over whether a state lawmaker is doxing ICE agents, more disputes between the Maricopa County Recorder and supervisors, and more are Matthew Benson of Veritas. Matt, good morning.
Good morning.
And Democratic strategist Tony Connie. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Matt, let me start with you on Senate President Warren Peterson. He's asking the U.S. Attorney for Arizona to look into one of his Democratic colleagues, State Senator Annalise Ortiz. She was reposting some social media posts about where ICE agents were located, courthouses, things like that, during the time that they were picking up migrants and starting deportation proceedings. He is accusing her of doxing them, of breaking other various laws. She is saying this is no different than using Waze to alert other drivers a speed trap is on the way. I'm curious how you see this.
Well, I think we've seen in multiple jurisdictions around the country instances of people posting, as she did, where ICE activities are ongoing. I haven't seen any of those successfully prosecuted as doxing or interfering with a federal operation or anything else. So that'll be interesting to see going forward. I think the bigger thing for me is the notion, as she referred to these ICE agents as, I think, masked thugs or some term like that. I just think that is unfortunate. And it is similar to back in the 90s when it was the far right that would refer to federal agents as jackbooted thugs, which was also wrong. And so I just think it's unfortunate that that's the level of the discourse, and that's how we're referring to folks that are, you know, carrying out very difficult operations and putting themselves in harm's way in a lot of cases.
Tony, do you see this as a case of doxing?
No, it's not. It's not a case of doxing. This is protected by the First Amendment. The ASU clinic on the First Amendment said, no, she's within her rights. And aside from all this, and plus, you know, Warren Peterson wrote the doxing law, or at least he sponsored it. And maybe the reason why he referred this to the feds, because he knows it doesn't actually fit into what doxing is in the state. But, you know, this is specifically, she posted on Instagram that there was ICE activity and an address. That's it. That's all she posted. I've heard people, you know, it's not doxing or illegal or dangerous when the radio points out that there's police activity in a particular area. It's the exact same thing. And I think that, like, to be really clear about this, as we're getting into sort of the legal nuance of everything, this is an elementary school where this activity was happening. This is an elementary school where, you know, immigration enforcement was happening. And I don't think that is the kind of thing that Americans want to happen right now. And I think that tensions are really high because of the escalation and the sort of what I think are really dangerous tactics that have been utilized in this enforcement. I mean, people are like, oh, she's putting people in danger by doing this. When I hear that, I think, one, we know that didn't happen. We know that no one was injured. Nothing like that happened. Like, we know that. And the second thing is like, if there's potential for danger, why are they going into an elementary school without notifying the school, without doing any of those kind of things? Like, I think a lot of this is theater. I think that Peterson has been criticized for not being MAGA enough. And there were some radio hosts and some activists and people who were urging him to do something. And I think that's the reason why he did what he did. And I think that that part is really unfortunate, too.
Matt, let me ask you about something Tony just brought up, in the sense that tensions are very high. This was obviously something President Trump campaigned on doing. A lot of his voters want him to be doing this. You mentioned some of the rhetoric that critics are using. There's also obviously like a lot of fear and concern in certain communities, in immigrant communities and migrant communities about, you know, people who are both non-citizens and citizens have been swept up in some of these sweeps. Is there a way at this point, do you think, to bring that tension down at all? Or is this just kind of where we're at for now?
Oh, I think this is where we're at for now. And just to be clear, like, I don't believe the federal agents entered the elementary school. As I understand it, the operation was in the vicinity of the school. There's been, you know, reporting that it was some distance from the gate of the school, but I haven't seen anything to suggest they went onto school property. But that aside, emotions are running very high on both sides. And, again, these ICE agents are carrying out the job they've been instructed to do. I think we all have an interest to make sure that these agents are safe. And certainly we want to make sure also that the general public is kept safe. So, you know, this is obviously a very difficult situation on both sides.
Matt, how big of an issue? Obviously, we're a very long way away from elections next year, although people are obviously running and talking about it. How big of an issue would you expect immigration to be, maybe on both sides, both for the right and the left?
Well, I think it's going to be a big issue because it's Arizona and it's always a big issue here. What is interesting is that the number of illegal crossings has fallen to such a level. I mean, when was the last time you saw a press conference at the border with, you know, an elected official or, you know, media down? I mean, there's just nothing to see right now. And so in some ways that may actually boomerang against the Republican candidates simply because Trump has made this virtually a non-issue at the border itself.
Tony, what do you think? Big issue for both the Democrats and the Republicans?
Yeah, I think that like in the past when we've talked about immigration, people were thinking about the border. And then a lot of like people who were sort of like speaking out in favor of immigrants were thinking more about enforcement and individual lives and people. And one of the things that has happened because of the way that they're doing this enforcement is the public is opening their eyes to an element of this immigration fight that they necessarily weren't paying as much attention to before. And one of the things that I've already started to see in like public opinion research that's done internal and that kind of stuff is that there is a backlash among voters right now in Arizona and America to the way that this has been happening.
Mostly Democratic voters?
No, this is something that's pretty across the board. And so, you know, obviously Republicans are going to be more supportive of the president. But even then, you'll hear people do, you know, they'll add caveats saying like, well, they need to only be going after violent criminals. But I saw that they were, you know, at Home Depot, or I heard that they were, you know, going to courts or schools or whatever. And so I do think that there is a big backlash. And one of the things I'm keeping an eye on is that it seems that most of the Republican officials that are really like doubling down on this, I don't think that they're aware that that's something that's happening. And I think that that could end up hurting them electorally.
Well, Matt, you mentioned the fact that the border being as quiet as it is could potentially in some way hurt Republicans. Do you buy into what Tony's saying, that the way that these immigration raids, the mass deportation that so many voters voted for is going, do you think that could potentially hurt Republicans, or do you think that maybe helps Republicans?
No, of course the way that the operations are carried out matters. I think what voters support is going after criminal aliens, mm-hmm. and going after people with violent records. And to the extent that they're doing that, that's going to be popular with 80% of the public. But if you're, you know, going into other populations, people that have been here for, you know, decades and don't have a criminal record and things of that sort, or let's say scooping up people who may not even be in the country illegally or have some sort of a visa to be here and sending them to, you know, a dark site in a foreign country, like that those kind of things, even if they happen very rarely, impact public opinion in a bad way.
All right, guys, let's move on to the what is the ongoing saga between the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors and County Recorder Justin Heap. The lone Democrat on the board, Steve Gallardo, has filed a complaint with the Attorney General over open meeting violations for the recorder, Justin Heap. He, of course, the very short version of the background is he is trying to get support for the agreement between the supervisors and the recorder over who does what with elections, and was saying that he had Gallardo's vote, trying to get other, at least two other supervisors to side with him so that he could have the majority. Tony Gallardo is now saying that if he's trying to cajole votes out of public meetings and texting with others, that's a real problem. In addition to what Gallardo is saying, that Heap is lying about the fact that Gallardo was supporting him.
Yeah, he clearly was lying about the support, which is just weird. But it's also, it seems to be the kind of thing that Heap and the folks that run his office are doing. You know, Arizona has very sort of clear and strict open meeting laws. And I imagine a lot of the listeners don't really know what they are. But basically, it says that if you're going to be operating the business of government, you know, as a deliberative body, like a board or a city council, it should be done in front of the public. And so what that means is that behind the scenes, you might imagine that elected officials are sitting down and plotting how they're going to vote, but they're really not supposed to. It's supposed to be that deliberation is happening in front of the people. And that's why things have to be on the agenda, all that kind of stuff. And so what Gallardo is saying, basically based on the texts that that Heap himself sent, is that he's not doing that. He's going and he's talking to individual members and counting votes and doing these kinds of things. And so, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that that's probably what he's doing. You know, enforcement of open meeting laws is something that is often challenging because there are very important law enforcement activity, you know, like, you know, other things to work on. But I think that when it comes to sort of like the total lack of trust that the Republican, conservative Republican Board of Supervisors has with the Republican recorder, you know, I think that that's a thing to keep an eye on.
Matt, you and I have both spent a lot of time outside closed doors at the state capitol waiting for lawmakers who are getting their arms twisted to vote on certain things to come out. I mean, to Tony's point, this is something that happens a lot. Lawmakers, policymakers, elected officials trying to secure votes, not
well,
in front
state,
of the public.
The legislature has a different set of laws than these types of boards.
That is true. But like, I mean, does this seem problematic that he's texting other elected officials trying to get them on his side?
That's hard to say. And once you begin, let's say the AG takes this up and begins an investigation, nobody knows which way that goes. And, you know, frankly, if she starts poking around in, you know, the other text messages that the recorder is sending, you know, who knows what else is in there. So I think for me, the bigger issue is like this is just the latest in a string of mishaps for Recorder Heap. I mean, you know, don't forget his plan to send mail-in ballots to voters that weren't on the mail-in list.
Yeah.
Sending, 83,000 voters before the election a notice that they had to do something to ensure they were actually eligible to vote.
And then telling the public that there was a problem with that, right? Like he hid that problem. That was a big deal.
Yeah. And basically, you know, foisting that off on a third party vendor. So it's just, again, the latest in a string of problems with the recorder and his administration. And we're on the eve of a big election coming up in 26 and a lot at stake.
Yeah. Tony, let me start with you on the No Labels Party, which is looking for a rebrand. This is a fairly new operation that is already looking to potentially change its name. I'm curious, like, let's assume that they're able to do it and they're able to get some candidates on the ballot in 2026. What kind of impact might a third party like that have on elections here?
Well, I think we have seen that third party candidates don't really get much support in Arizona. That's a thing. But when some of these races are very, very close, potentially it could cause, you know, a candidate who otherwise would have won to lose. But
ask Matt Samet about that, right?
Right. And one of the weird things here, too, is that like No Labels blocked people from running for Senate in the last election. The Supreme Court ruled they can't do that, blah, blah. But you know, the person who was running was like a super MAGA person, right? And then like so it's like, who are these No Labels candidates? Are they on the right? Are they on the left? Are they in the middle? I don't know. But I think that like when it comes down to it, this, I don't think this is a super serious operation. It seems like it's just like a public relations push to try and get the failed, top two initiative that voters rejected last time, pushed through, right, to sort of change the way our elections are done. But yeah, I think this is a little frustrating. I think it's a little bit silly. But yeah.
Matt, do you think there's a possibility of spoiler candidates or maybe even a no labels or whatever they're called next candidate actually getting elected to something?
Well, first, kudos to you for a reference to a 23-year-old gubernatorial race.
Yeah, you like that?
Matt Salmon.
Thank you.
There were like six listeners that were all nodding along with that. So
it's public radio. There's like 10 listeners who got that one, right?
Yeah, that was good. Of course, like Arizona is a very close state. Elections are determined on the margins. A spoiler, like a no labels can play a spoiler role. They're not going to win, but they could play a spoiler role. Mm-hmm. Every little bit matters in races that are determined by, the attorney general's race last time around was like
280 votes.
200 something votes. Yeah.
There you go. So, yes.
Do you see this sort of in the same vein as like the Libertarian Party, the Green Party, like candidates that get maybe 1-2%, but in some of those close races can really make a difference?
100%.
Is that how you see it, Tony?
Yeah, I do see it. I mean, of course, it's still up to the campaigns and the candidates to try and earn the support of the voters who are choosing to go to this third party. But yeah, it definitely could make an impact.
So no Ross Perot's coming out of this, you don't think?
I can't imagine that somebody would get that more than 2 or 3%.
I said that just to go a little bit further back in time for you, Matt. I hope you appreciate that.
No, I like it.
All right, let's talk about some people who actually we know are going to be running for office. We see that in the 4th congressional district, that's Greg Stanton's district, Dr. Zudi Jasser is making another run. He ran last year. Also, a former state representative, Eric Descheny, will be challenging Jonathan Nez in the 2nd congressional district Democratic primary. That's Eli Crane's district in northern Arizona. Tony, do you see – I'm curious, like one of these you have the attempt at least for a rematch. We don't know if Jasser will get a primary challenge or not, but the attempt for a rematch. And in the other one with Descheny trying to prevent a rematch between Nez and Eli Crane.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's an interesting – primary. I don't know how it'll shake up. I think that it's an uphill battle for both of those campaigns that are facing the incumbent. You know, I think that Greg Stanton's in a really strong position, and I think that in the first district, it's possible that a Democrat can win for sure. But I think it'll be a challenge. But we're a year away from the primaries, and this stuff's already happening. Like this is, we're just in that perpetual campaign cycle now, where there just is no downtime.
I'm curious, like, is it possible to look broadly at the idea of rematches? We're seeing this in David Schweikert's district, where two of the candidates who ran in the Democratic primary last time are running again. Or is it so candidate specific, district specific, maybe even cycle specific, that it's not really possible to tell whether or not a rematch will be successful where maybe in the past it wasn't?
Well, I mean, I think that with population changes in the state and with everything, each race is its own unique race. But what happens is if they have spent a bunch of money in the previous campaign, you are basically saying, okay, you chose not to vote for me last time, but you should change your mind and vote for me this time, which sometimes can be a challenge if there isn't some feeling of regret that the voters have about the person that they've put into office. And so that's one of the things that needs to happen. And, particularly like the Schweikert race is like, how are they going to convince voters like, hey, actually, like you made a mistake. And so I think that's what when I'm looking at a candidate that I want to support, I want someone who I think can make that argument effectively.
Matt, let me ask you about Zudi Jasser first going up against Greg Stanton. That is nominally a competitive district, but Stanton has typically won it fairly easily over the years.
Yeah, that district has performed more progressive than it would appear on paper, and it has kind of trended increasingly that way. Bigger picture, we used to say all politics is local, right? That was the axiom. Mm-hmm. That has really turned on its head in the last 10 years, and now all politics is national. So these races are really our partisan divide. Everything has become nationalized. I would argue that these districts, especially your swing districts, are determined more by what's happening at a federal level. Like if the temperature, what is the temperature regarding Donald Trump? If he is super, super unpopular coming into the midterms, then, these kind of competitive districts, then you could see Republicans all over the country get swept out of office. But if Trump is actually like pretty popular, kind of around 50%, 48%, 52%, then you're going to see, Congressman Schweikert and Siskomani and other folks like that have no issue. And really, I think it's more about the national temperature than it is these individual races and the candidates.
I guess the one thing we know for sure, at least I think we know for sure in Arizona, is that the congressional districts that we have now will be in place next year as opposed to some other states, right?
I mean, it looks that way, but I think Arizona is not going to redistrict before the next, certainly not in the next
few months or something.
Yeah.
Tony, I'm curious about the Democratic primary up in the CD2 in the Eli Crane district. You have two members of the Navajo Nation. Both have been elected to things. Jonathan Nez was the Navajo Nation president. Dis Cheney was a former state rep. It's not necessarily a primary that's going to get a ton of attention, and Nez was the nominee last year. I'm curious, at least at this very early stage, how you see that one shaping up.
I think it's going to be likely a pretty intense campaign. You know, it might not hit our airwaves or anything like this, but I imagine that the campaigning is going to be pretty robust between those candidates. I think that Nez is a really popular guy up there. I think he probably, I haven't seen any polling, probably is the favorite still. But we'll see how that plays out over the next year.
Matt, in a district like that, is it safe to say that Donald Trump would have to be really, really unpopular for someone like Eli Crane to truly be in trouble?
Really, really, really unpopular. I mean, Eli Crane is going to be very difficult to take out of that district.
Regardless of who the Democratic nominee is?
Regardless.
Interesting. All right, we'll have to leave it there. Matthew Benson, Tony Conde, thanks to you both for coming in. I really appreciate it. That's it for this episode of The Show podcast. To find out more about the stories from today or other episodes, visit theshow.kjzz.org. And you can subscribe to KJZZ's The Show on your favorite podcasting site. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening today.